KXLU 88.9 FM in LA, KXLU.com, all around the world, coming to you from the Loyola Marymount University campus. The sun has just set. We're kind of in some fun fall weather here, and you are listening to a show called The Mystic Pete Chronicles. I am Mystic Pete. My co-host is Christine right here. Christine Ann, say hi in the mic.
Hi, so grateful to be here.
Such a lovely radio voice. I have a very special crew. Victoria Looseleaf made this connection. We're going to get her on one of these days. But I have Mike Mollett, S.A. Griffin, and Neil Taylor in studio. And I'm going to let them introduce themselves and tell you all about who they are. Really important people in Los Angeles culture, the Los Angeles scene. You guys are important. So says Mystic Pete. Boo. Well, Mike, why don't you start and give the short version, because we could do a few hour show just on you.
Yeah, well, I'm an L.A. alien, born and raised in this fabulous, crazy, you know, dystrophic, you know, section of our minds and in reality, there has been a lot of that changes of reality in Los Angeles for me, and I'm a visual artist, and I do weaves and time twists, weaved archaeology pieces with material all from our home. In the walls and et cetera. And I've been working out with some Karma Bums that was Lost Tribe before that. And SA was a Lost Tribe and Karma Bum. That goes back into the 80s. Neil Taylor had the ugliest gallery in Los Angeles in the early mid 80s. It was just so cool. And must have showed about 125 artists. And you know, I was doing Dada stuff, and my mind is like my voice. It just moves around here. Wait, where did we all go? Is that there I am. Hello, yeah, okay.
What next? Let's start there. We'll get to the 20 other facets in a minute. S.A. Griffin.
Okay. I was born. And here I am. And let's see here. This is embarrassing. Good. Really. I'm bald. I have blue eyes. I Lately, I've been sleeping a little better. It's not too bad. I've been really depressed off and on for all my life. But, you know, that's the gift that keeps on giving, and the gift is very tightly wrapped. And if you don't give the gift will give you up. So you got to get down with the gift and be on. You don't want to be off. As opposed to Mr. Leary in the past, it is time to turn off, tune out, and drop in.
Well done. Neil Taylor, what say you, sir?
I'm almost at my 50th anniversary of moving to Los Angeles, where I went to film school. And later, I worked downtown at Lace early on. And at a fundraiser at Lace, I was the bartender with the gorilla mask. And this guy called right before that wanted to start this group called L.A. Dada. And wanted to do a festival. I was interested. He came in. I said, come to the festivities.
Who, me?
And Mike Millett came in with a fish necklace, which I took a bite of, that she had shellacked.
Ugh, God, it smelled.
And he's still my friend after all these years of running a gallery, performing across Canada up through California. And here we are.
I told you, Neil, that I had a surprise for you.
I know.
This is on air. He doesn't know I'm going to do this, but there's something else you did in life that I know about. You were the artist in residence. You got it at a school called Smash. And I was the father of one of your mentees, Journey.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That was such a great position to work there at that school at that time when they didn't know where the future was going to be for the school.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you had an important effect on my son, Journey. And now he's like a top high-paid CGI artist.
Wow.
And, you know, you're in the lineage of his success.
Fantastic.
And, you know, so he
was great then, too.
Yeah. Mm. A bright guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, when he was like, I don't know, 10 to 15, he'd be like on the computer for 6-8 hours a day, and it would drive me crazy. You know, it would drive us crazy. If I knew he was going to be making, you know, bank on computers, I would have shut up and just, yeah, you play your games. It's fine. Leave it alone.
But we know where he is.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway.
Well, I've still got some portraits from some of the kids of them, like, you know, some different ones that I did, artists in residencies in different places, and like, thank you for doing this. They do portraits of me. So they're very fun.
It was a beautiful school, and it was
great teachers.
A philosophical community, and it wasn't geographical. It was everybody who wanted to be at the cool school with the creative kids. That's, well, we met our community at this school, Smash, Santa Monica
Alternative Schoolhouse.
Thank you. Santa Monica Alternative Schoolhouse. Yeah. And at one point I look around, and all my friends are from this school, and I got very involved. And
Russ Tamlin.
Bonnie and their daughter, and
their
Amber.
Daughter, Amber, who was just amazing.
Who is a famous actress.
Yeah, and some great, 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 beautiful people.
Married to David Gross. And yeah. she played the role of
Well, you sure woke
Arcadia.
Me up with that one.
But anyway, you were an important force at this
Thank
beautiful local
much.
School that had a big influence in this dumpy schoolhouse, but somehow we became a community. And anyway, that was my surprise, Neil. Neil Taylor.
I'm at 50.
I just have one tragic thing to add. I had one of your beautiful shirts you created for the school.
Right.
And at the beginning of the summer, I don't know, I was just kind of clearing out all my old stuff, and I sold my last Neil Taylor shirt to, like, oh, he's leaving.
He's walking out.
No, he's
going to
get his shirt.
Oh, he's gone. Yes, I sold for $10.
He's going to look on eBay.
Give you the shirt off my back.
Yeah, there we go. Over money. Cool. For $10. Well, I just thought somebody would love to see it from the, and I sold it for $10 to the local shirt store. Anyway,
I would have given you 9?
Yeah, I've been punishing myself all week for that stupid move. Anyway, thank you, Neil, for your great influence on the community and my son personally. Well, Mike, let's the thing I originally mentioned when we booked the show was the Mud People. It was a group I always wanted to get involved with, but I never actually did. So let's talk about that. I think people have heard about the Mud People in Los Angeles.
We were Mud. This was 1988. And some friends had come back from New York. They were working with a place called Fashion Moda. This is like some of the real roots. And a group from Boulder were asked to do something in the streets. And so there was this inkling, and they had pictures of these guys. So this is like the real skinny here, man. And they had plaster of Paris heads, and they were sort of white, and they were moving along, and you know, just hanging out and walking and jumping and stuff, I guess. But anyway, these friends were going to have an African reggae club in Little Tokyo, and let's get a bunch of our friends and you know to make mud to be mud men. Okay, so it was all plaster Paris white, and we had these sticks that were like 2 feet. 2x2s, totally just cut off from long pieces of wood. And it was our first gig. And since then, we've evolved. We've become from being noisy and wild, wild, crazy simian tribe covered in mud. You know, we usually have about six different color muds, but we move slowly. We don't speak. We just hang out. We've evolved in a few years to what civilizations and cultures took millennia to do. It was sort of an interesting concept. And Leonardo DiCaprio was a mud man twice. He surprised.
Leonardo, that's right.
He was
part of it.
He beeped up a little bit. He didn't know what the hell. Yeah, but about the same time, almost the exact same time, as one leans back, hey, I just need a big rubber band to do a performance art piece. I have a rubber band here to this speaker, to this microphone. Hello, microphone. So my head will stay there. I could do a sort of a pogo-y, springy thing there. But yeah, where what? So within a few months, I met these friends of mine, S.A., Michael Bruner, Doug Knott. And we became a group, the Lost Tribe.
That was the early 80s.
That was,
we met in about 81, 82.
Okay, but we didn't do anything, I believe, until like 88. Really?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
April 1st, 1985. The intersection, San Francisco.
Well, yes, that was our first gig. We were reading our work and messing around.
It was a terrible show.
Should be without rehearsal.
About a dozen people showed up, and most of them were our friends that probably came up with us.
Been there.
Yeah.
Are they still your friends?
So the tribe, that was, I've always been the driver, and this particular trip, we drove my 1972 Mercury Capri.
Oh,
and I had had an accident with my 71 Mercury. You try to get one now, dude. They're like $20,000 because they're little race cars. And so my 71 Capri, somebody rear-ended me. And so I got the 72, took the engine out of this. And my neighbor helped me. Did this the day we left. There were four of us. Took the engine out of the 71, dropped it into the 72, put four guys in this Mercury Capri.
It was a little sketchy, I think,
all of our luggage, whatever. Yeah, we made it. So that was the very first one. And the tribe came together.
Beautiful thing.
You
can't say that.
I didn't say anything.
You didn't hear anything.
No, I did. I said, that's what I said. Anyway, we conspired in the back of Mike's former VW art bus, driven by Hermine, who back then we thought was really, really radical. She was an older lady she had a shaved head and tattoos everywhere, and she was a wonderful human person.
Beautiful orchid tattoo. Yeah.
But in 1984, 85, that was still pretty radical. And she was a wonderful person. Anyway, we were in the back of her VW bus coming back from a gig in Orange County, I believe. There were no seats in the back, so we were all on the floor, and we conspired. I don't know, I don't think any of us know where the name really came from, but it was a group effort. So we became the Lost Tribe. And the whole deal with the Lost Tribe was to do performance poetry, but accessible. Something that people could dig, like entertainment.
Yeah, Pepita, little Luke.
Well, people, I think, romanticize like the Beat Poets and Bukowski and Ken Keyes and this whole scene. But you guys were like the L.A. guys doing that. And I mean, that was what one of the reasons I was...
S.A. was the driver. And I'll tell you, very strong similarity to the Merry Prankster.
To Mickey Mouse.
Whoa. Wavy Gravy and all these guys.
Yeah, Wavy Gravy.
That you were that in L.A., and I was excited to put you on radio because a lot of people don't know about it. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, a seminal experience. And here you are at my radio show.
Thank you.
I just wanted to go revisit the Mud People experience. We want to be entertain us. We want something to happen. We want a climax. We want intensity. And you have this group.
What
was going on?
Yeah.
You did nothing.
No, that was it. You know, we were the alternative.
You'll be in one of those heads.
To speed, to goals, to need, to direction. I mean, it became a therapeutic thing. One person said, "Oh man, it's been 2 weeks since I mudded up, and I still feel really good." And it's, you know, it is. It's a we transform, you know, from our street threads, and you know, sometimes communally, or you know, different spots if we got some gig, and we end up connecting, and we've dropped the sticks. We have nothing in our hands. We're free to move, and we mud up, and then we have our heads, which are full head things, heads. They're really like heads and holes here, and ear holes, or maybe I remember a girlfriend of Neil's. She made like a beehive head, and it was shocking. Yeah, so
an outrage.
It was momentarily. Yeah, and I got to let it go. And, you know, as the leader de facto, I had no idea that was what was happening, but it was true. And it's been a beautiful thing in my life. And we usually do the LA River every year. We've got something probably coming up in a couple weeks. No date. There's some event. Oh, it's a Frogtown, and it's something at the Frogtown Brewery, which they're not a bad brewery. And I've got a growler to take in there too. Of course, not
it's
as a
not
mud
an
person.
Advertising.
But I think think that's maybe where we're gonna hang out.
I have played cello with a Buto dancer, and it's a reminiscent of Buto. Because kind of nothing happens in Buto either. It's just a state of being. It's a state of presence.
Yes, state of being. Right. And, and it's not mime, that's for sure. And it's, exactly, it's transformational. You know, we live wherever we are in our particular explorative, curious ways with mud all over our bodies. And, you know, clothes, not lewd. I've been naked a couple times as mud people, and that was cool, but not normally. And there's four of us right now. We've had up, there's probably been 70 people who have mudded up in 40 years, 45 years.
Explain what dada means.
Dada.
Well, I'll jump in on this.
It's kind of behind everything here.
There's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, what do we say?
So my opinion, my feeling of Dada, and like you said, Mike and I formed L.A. Dada in 1979.
That was,
okay.
We didn't.
Dada was born in 1915. Dada was born with the onslaught of World War I. And when Donna was born, it was slapped across the face because
it was a cross-eyed mongrel.
It was the First World War. It was something we cannot talk about.
So Dada, back, it started with this absurdist, intimate,
iconoclastic and irreverent. And you see why punks got into that. And the collage aspect.
And it was like all these people of went to Zurich.
Was a hot item, especially in the 70s and 80s.
In the arts and in architecture.
1915.
Yeah. And so it's interesting because, I mean, somebody that was one of the Dadaists in 1915 comes back to Los Angeles in the story of his daughter, who becomes a curator of a major art institution in this town for years.
And this has a big influence on what you're doing. Well, take it from there.
Okay, boss. Dada.
Say that again.
Dada. Exactly. I meant to say that first. Anyway, yes, a profound influence. Getting back to the Lost Tribe, that was really influenced by what was going on around us, specifically performance art and punk. And the Lost Tribe was responding to a lot of that. But these guys, when I met them, they gifted me with Dada, which becomes Flux in time. Mm-hmm. And so later on up the road, when we became the Karma Bums, which was that was more beat influenced, because it's Car plus Dharma Bums plus Karma is Karma Bums.
With a C. C-A-R-M-A.
With a C, yes. Yeah.
And you had a Cadillac, I believe.
I had a 1959 Cadillac. Man. Yes, I did. And we drove that gosh darn car all over the Western U.S. and Canada. And we inhaled our lives gleefully together. And boy, I'll tell you, it was high and low. It was the best and the worst of everything, because when it was good, it was great. When it was bad, it was terrible.
Mortification.
Yep.
And I was there as a referee, and sometimes
it didn't work very well.
A bumper car or something like
that. Yeah, Neil, he went, AKA Scooter, and also Zitsu. You guys had Zitsu was a great gallery. That was down in MacArthur Park when I encountered it.
In L.A., said yep. The L.A. Weekly, and... Yep. That was so much fun.
Yep. And these guys brought me into mail art as well. And mail art is also deeply, deeply influenced by Dada and
mail
Flux.
Art. Mail art.
M-A-I-L. Oh, mail art's totally M-A-I-L. Dada and Flux.
Oh, yeah.
I once tried mailing a bagel. Oh, never got there. Never got there.
Well, I recently tried to mail a spoon to Leslie Caldera. It never got there. But I did mail a flat can to Bibiana for her Flux show in 2020. And that used to be the mail art scene, mailing coconuts and whatever you could get away with.
There was a great show called Test the Post Office that was in Santa Monica College at a gallery. And the stuff that people sent in, you know, wine glasses, eggs, shoes,
my sandwich,
full size mannequin, marijuana leaves.
Marijuana leaves?
You're mailing this stuff, okay.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yes, referee, please.
That's delicious.
Test the post office.
So anyway, yes, deeply influenced. And so the Karma Bums was the antithesis of the Lost Tribe. The rules for the Karma Bums basically were there were no rules. With the Lost Tribe, we had lots of rules, and we fought all the time.
And we did not always discuss those rules. We believed each other had them, or that it was going to work out okay.
Well, basically, the trip was, is it was more, as people who experienced it, they basically said it was more like a happening. The Karma Bums, the Tribe was a crack performance poetry ensemble.
Yeah.
We rehearsed, we had costumes, we had props, sometimes and we got laughs, all that kind of crap. But we played the Lhasa Club a lot. The Lhasa Club is very, very important.
Iconic.
Iconic to truly. Say the least.
Performance
to say the least.
Art, music, venue, you know, pushing the envelope between theater and visual
everything,
visual art, performance art, and poetry,
and we met next door at the Water Gallery. The complex it was the Lhasa Club, the Water Gallery, and the Fig Tree Theater, all owned by Frederick Sauls, who lived upstairs. Mm-hmm. He was an artist who made all of his money in precious and semi-precious metals, and he drank a lot of Bombay gin, and he was a raving maniac, but he owned everything. And so the Lhasa Club, though, and they were all connected by hallways. You could go to each venue in the through the back. But the Lhasa Club was
not everybody knew that.
Yeah, not everybody knew that. But the Lhasa Club was ground zero. We met at the Water Gallery at the Wednesday Night Poetry Opens. That's how we all met.
Let me play a tune by Leonard Cohen.
All right.
Everybody knows. Just give us a moment, and then we will be right back.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants box and chocolates and the long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows that you really do. Everybody knows that you've been faithful. Give or take a night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet, but there were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. And everybody knows that it's now or never. Everybody knows that it's me or you. And everybody knows that you live forever. Oh, when you've done a line or two. Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows that it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman are just a shining artifact of the past. Everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. And everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through. From the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach in Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming upon. Take
one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows, everybody knows, everybody knows, that's how it goes. Everybody knows, everybody knows, everybody knows, that's how it goes. Everybody knows, everybody knows, that's how it goes, everybody knows.
Me, 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 me.
Novelty is dead. Occupy imagination. There is no God, only imagination. Embrace the desire for freedom as a revolution of the ordinary inside a wasteland of spontaneous collapse and decomposing thought. Make contact. Create human relationships worthy of honorable desires outside of ordered structures. Remove yourself from all labels and expectations. Break free from the scales that cover your eyes. Learn to see spectacle as it isn't meant to be. Inside the insurgency of contemporary reality as product. See as is, as isn't. Rock the horse of postmodern modernist revivalism. Practice creative instinct as a daydream believer, disarming the established ideas of an illusory left, while exploring the disorganized theologies of a right in retreat. Be on the vanguard. No one knows who no one knows. Burn imaginary bridges to nowhere. Accept that there is no revolutionary movement inside a petrified order. Liberate the form waiting inside the spectacle. Become the situation, striking lost and indefinable chords as poetic terrorism and random magic, exploiting discontentment everywhere. Stick to the question, free from the gravity posed by questions. Sing the weird new situation as beatnik Dada and ecstatic nihilist ravings alive within the animating theory of real life and a brighter future of the now, now. Now.
Woo.
Now, 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 now. Now, now, now.
You are listening to KXLU 88.9 FM in LA, KXLU.com, all around the world. I have in studio today the extraordinary individuals named Mike Mollett, S.A. Griffin, and Neil Taylor. Mm-hmm. Christine Ann is my co-host.
Woohoo!
Now, we're going to enter the part of the show where Christine says a word, a person
W-O-R-D.
Or a place. And these are all very important, iconic locations or individuals related to Los Angeles, and you guys are just going to talk about it.
She's gonna say
something, and you're
Can
gonna just
respond?
You'll respond.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, I get it.
My mother. Oh, I'm sorry, we haven't started yet.
Exciting.
get on. Let's get on our mics. Hello. Hello, mics. Hello.
Start.
Hello, Mike.
Beep, beep, beep. Highways.
Highways Performance Space in Santa Monica, where we painted the bus for 3 days, and I wish I'd filmed it. There were people crawling all over that bus painting it, and we ripped the insides out, left enough seats just for the people on the trip. About 20 people came on that trip, and it was called the what was that called? What was it? Ultimately, it was
Forward.
No.
Further.
No. The bus was called
the bus.
Onward.
Oh my gosh.
The bus was called Onward.
Yeah. What a story this is.
It was called the No Girlfriends Tour of Words because my now wife at the time wanted to go on the trip. And I said, no, I can't let you go along because you're too distracting.
Well,
but she was.
We had so much other distractions on that bus. I swear, at one point, sort of coming back, maybe like 6 days, 7 days into it, I was hallucinating and I hadn't had anything. Oh man, we were kicked out of a place.
Well, that happens when you don't eat.
You know, it was the.
We were.
Did you use any oil on that trip?
Oh yeah. No, the bus. I trusted the people who sold me the bus. They said, "Oh, this will make it to Denver and back." We never made it to Denver. That bus cost me a whole lot of dough, and I was chasing dreams. I was, as they say, if you meet Buddha on the road, kill him, and there's good reason because it'll cost you a lot of money.
It was blowing oil.
Yeah.
Just leaving LA. It was like, oh.
But that was two things. It was the Pranksters. The Pranksters bus was a big inspiration.
Mm-hmm. But we picked up farther, the Pranksters and took them with us.
Or further. Yeah, we picked up. It was full of. That's who we were. No, but it was. And we also had people from Cacophony Society on the bus.
Uh-huh.
But no, it was a
filmmakers.
The bus was further.
Crazy.
The Pranksters bus was further. Mine was onward. But the Cadillac was farther.
The guy with the bullwhip.
But the guy with the bullwhip. But what I was going to say was,
we're going to do a movie on this. Okay.
And the other buses that were inspiration, because I grew up in the projects up in Richmond, California. And so we had a library bus that came to the neighborhood, which was very important. And then we had a Sunday school bus that came to the neighborhood. So that's how we got religion and literature in the neighborhood I grew up in. So buses were really important in my life.
Mm. Next one.
Lotus Weinstock.
Lotus Weinstock.
Name from way back. Oh. I know you.
She was married. She was married to David Jove,
yes.
Who was a very intense, brilliant
new
maniac who always
theater.
Carried a piece like a small pistol, and he did
theater.
New Wave Theater that was.
Beep. Oh God!
Bing, 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 bing.
So
awesome.
Thing,
yeah.
You were worse than me.
Fluttery. He was fluttery. No, he was not fluttery. People thought that Peter Ivers was the fluttery one because he had a lot of feminine, but he was rather famous, and he was the host.
He was great.
David Jove organized it, and he edited, schnedded it. If you go over to his place near Cantor's at 2 midnight, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and you...
Yeah,
Neil and I met him saw him at Doug and Janet's.
But Lotus, we're talking about Lotus.
I got off
Lotus. Lotus was a wonderful, wonderful human being, a beautiful person.
Forgot about her.
She used to do a lot of the Poetry in Motion gigs at the.
She was a comedian
at Cafe Largo.
Yeah, she was a comedian.
Yeah.
That was her main
That's
thing.
That's right.
And her daughter is Lily Hayden.
Oh man,
who's brilliant?
Yeah. Well, Lotus was brilliant too.
Yeah, she is.
And but you know, I couldn't. Imagine her, anybody being the girlfriend, boyfriend, or anything of David Jove. So she was wise to separate.
This is all LA stuff we're talking about. That really, we need to have a movie on each of these things.
Oh, man.
Let's go to the next one.
Beep.
Beyond Baroque.
Beyond Baroque.
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 That's another movie.
We all got connections with that, especially.
I played cello there, by the way.
Oh, did you?
Susie Williams and Jerry Falco.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, I know.
Good friends.
Ah, okay.
So you want me to talk? You guys want
to
talk?
Yeah, go ahead, man.
Beyond Baroque, in the old days when we were still really punk, we never went to Beyond Baroque. because it was on the west side, and we were being snobs, and we thought, oh, they're not interested in us. But I've probably been frequenting Beyond Baroque now.
I didn't think of it that way. It was just the distance for me.
Well, the distance was bad, but no, there was a little bit of attitude going on. Come on, man, cop to it. You were punk, and you didn't have attitude. FTW.
I wish some of the fights were on video.
We had stuff.
Turn on the camera. It's going to start shortly.
Yeah. Neil and I had a Dada show, and it got real dicey. And for this Dada festival that he and I did in 1980, it was all over. We had found objects.
It was at
Otis.
The Venice Jail.
Next door is the jail. That's right. Spark now.
That's the original. The jail, right.
It was the City Hall.
City Hall is where it's at now.
The fire department on one side, and then the jail and the police. That's where we had this Dada show.
Beyond Baroque started as a magazine, though.
And it was, and a lot of the old beats, they had this, what's his name, had a house on Abakinney that was called Washington, West Washington, I think, at the time.
Well, George Drury Smith came to Venice looking for beatniks. That's what he came here for. And they were here
Beyond Baroque.
Because he went directly to Venice because of Venice West and the Venice Beats. And they were all still booking back in 68. I think was Stewart still around? I'm not sure. Perkoff. He died. Yeah, Perkoff.
Neil, you want to add something?
Yeah, here. Go ahead, man.
No, I mean, well, coming up December, we will all be probably on stage at Beyond Baroque.
We're doing a Bukowski thing December 20th.
Yeah.
And there's a great Bukowski show there now.
And Maintenant 19 is going to be there.
Maintenant
19 is going to be doing there, which is a great visual and poetry book that comes out every year.
Okay, next one, Christine.
Linda Albertino.
Oh,
Albertano.
My fault. Okay.
What?
That's something.
What a beautiful, beautiful human being.
Yeah, after this show.
Linda was.
She was.
She was about six feet four, and she played and sang for the USO way back in Vietnam. And then she worked with Alice Cooper. She was the dominatrix,
dominatrix.
Yeah, and she was gorgeous. It's so tall, but what charm! She did not get sucked into the attitude.
She was beautiful
or actors.
Beautiful, wonderful. I got to perform with her. She wasn't a dominatrix at that performance.
Neil, sorry, man.
Oh, I'm sorry, Neil. She was a really wonderful person.
I'll take it.
She was one of the premier performance artists, poets in Los Angeles.
Worked with dancers.
I think she gets underplayed in terms of her poetry because of her performance kind of overshadowed everything. Yeah. But she was a great poet.
She had a dance group, a performance group that worked out with her.
Yep.
Really, things planned. You know, there was a chorus and there was movement. There was
dancers.
Her poetry. Yeah. And she was one of the people who could memorize things. I have CRS, can't remember. Beep.
Maybe that might have been an issue when we performed together.
All right, let's go to the next one. Beth Lapidus.
Oh, Beth Lapidus.
Oh.
Uncabaret.
That's a great show.
It's still going.
I'm
not familiar with
her. She's got great people that perform. I'm on the email list. I get there when I can. Some of my friends.
LA icons, the real culture.
I think she was on Victoria Looseleaf's show.
Okay.
Some of my friends have performed there.
About 400 shows.
Okay,
some
Victoria
of my friends
Looseleaf.
Aren't here anymore.
Yeah.
Victoria Looseleaf, Mike.
She called me yesterday. Neil? She called me.
Victoria Looseleaf called up Neil Taylor today.
Yesterday.
And?
She didn't talk trash about you this time.
Can you say that again right into that mic? Pow!
Well, Victoria's the Loose Leaf Report, we were all on that many times.
So she had a video show.
Yeah, the Loose Leaf Report.
And she was a harp player, lovely.
Well, Access Cable, which sadly is no more. But Access Cable,
it was
especially
fun
during the punk
period
and all that period after, cable, access cable was critical. That's David Jove, New Wave Theater.
Right.
Victoria Loosely for Lucy Report. And it was kind of a scene, much like KXLU was kind of once upon a time, where almost anything goes.
And a lot of people got like the first rung on the ladder. Yes. That's where you...
Sometimes it did happen.
Yeah.
And they would go on to really big things. I think there's
you
a few
creds,
big
stars. You got some creds, you work through it, and you learn some stuff, and okay.
And then make mistakes and learn. Otherwise,
that was kind of the whole point. And Alana was terrible for that reason. I mean, terrible. But it was high kitsch. It was high cheese, man.
As we know.
Yeah, and the high cheese melts very sweetly.
Yeah, some of the nice. Worst kitsch becomes a really cool.
Yeah, we did stuff.
I did the Insensitive Naked Man, and then Mike stole it from me.
I didn't know that. I dealt with worms.
No, you did the Gardener. Victoria stole it.
I don't believe so.
Oh, yes, she did, because I did her show.
You might have wanted to see them naked back then, but not anymore.
The point was, what I was trying to do was this, and this is a performance, right? Getting back to Andy Kaufman. So the Insensitive Naked Man, I literally drove around town naked with a camera in the car, walked into the studio like my hero Captain Satellite when I was a kid, walked in the studio naked, sat down, she did the whole show with me naked.
Uh-oh.
And then we did another one. What I wanted to do is I wanted to take it to the point where I had a naked audience. Everybody, the crew was naked, and she would be the only person with clothes on.
That's great.
And, but she didn't.
Okay.
She wouldn't let me go there.
Did you write that down? Write that down, because that's a great art piece.
No, but it had to happen over time. And then I didn't do it anymore. Then I think she turned you or Fleck into the Insensitive Naked Gardener, which I called her on it recently.
You don't realize how much fun I had with those worms essay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to mention, she's a fine writer.
Oh, she's a great writer. She's a great person.
Uh-huh. Plenty of things in the Times. And
I went to Mahler's.
She's humorous. She's real smart. Yeah, she's doing...
And gosh darn it, people like
last
her.
Week.
People like her.
All right, let's go to the next one.
With her.
Ellen, maybe.
Oh, my God, the giggling goddess of work. Ellen.
Where did she come from?
Well, when the Karma Bumps was put together...
Yeah.
Two things were very important to me. One, that we didn't argue anymore. I was so sick and tired of arguing. Because the Lost Tribe dissolved.
Lost Tribe.
Because I pulled the plug. And they never really forgave me. And so, because we had rules with the tribe and the Karma Bums was this very important rule. If one guy drops out, it's over. We don't replace people. It's the original crew and that's it. And so... when we were doing the Karma Bums, as we went on the first tour, I called Ellen, and she was pretty, really unknown. She'd only done a couple of open readings at that point. And so I called her because I wanted her to open. Because if Ellen could open, and I knew she could do it, and she's a brilliant performer, brilliant writer.
Was this in 88?
The 89. And so, because Ellen, her language is peppery at times, and her politics are heavy. And so I knew that if people would dig her, we could get away with anything. And it worked like a charm. Because she's a wonderful opener, is a wonderful show all by herself. But for us to follow Ellen was perfect, because we just kind of continued with the madness on our way. The first time we encountered Ellen was Mike Bruner and I were at the Midnight Special for an open reading, and we had a yellow legal pad that we were signing up on, and she was still standing there. She just signed up or something, and I looked at it, and she had Ellen, and in parentheses she put the word maybe, and she was standing in front of us giggling. No, she was standing in front of us giggling and shuffling and carrying on, and I go, "You are Ellen, maybe," and then she started using
it. You gave her.
She started using it.
Wow! I wondered about that.
Yeah, and because she goes, "Well, I don't know if I can read her. Not, I mean, I'm so shy." You know, and I said, "Well, you are Ellen, maybe."
And let's have a quick music break, and then we'll wrap everything up.
No hell below us. imagined no possessions.
Happens. Go to a good party and leave too soon. Make more than eye contact, turn and speak to another. Pour a yummy IPA, drip, trip, and spill it. Text in the middle of the night to a sleeping ill friend. Beep. Happens. Delete the wrong message. Not make that phone call. Avoid my heart. Pay with a 50, thinking it's a 5. Beep, fart while you're driving with a new friend. Beep, run a red and pay for it. Beep, beep, beep. Use the dangerous salsa picante instead. What the beep? Leave that barbecue and the blue sky alone.
Mike Mullet, KXLU. This is the Mystic Pete Chronicles. That was a little bit of John Lennon. Sorry, John, to cut you off. We're in the final few minutes before Pat with Alien Air comes on, so stay tuned all night. Well, closing statements. I kind of have a general question, because what you're doing is obvious. Well, it's in this Dada tradition, and which, you know, the essence of it, it's going to change all the time. Whatever they were doing in 1915
Scurrilous, is wonderful.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Iconoclastic.
Exactly.
You know, hey, come on, what a world this is.
And ooh. I think there is a force in society that wants to draw us to what's understandable, solid, conservative, traditional, binary, so we know exactly what we know what real men are, and that's one direction. And there's another direction going towards freedom, creativity, chaos, and liberation. Make the closing statement you would like, and that can be a part of it. What do we do, guys?
Okay, I think this is a very pertinent question. I think we live in the age of Dada right now. We've always been in an age of flux because flux is perpetual. But, however, flux is what we are. But Dada, the coming of age of Dada is the internet, is the digital world, is AI, is everything we're experiencing. That's Dada, and we're going down that path, and there's nothing you can do about it.
And really, you don't have to use that term anyway, because we're in it together, and our family is expanding. I like to believe of that. More people in my life, in our lives, that we can connect to. I just lost my wife recently, so I'm dealing with that.
Mm.
And here we are. Step carefully, pay attention, love those around you. Good night.
Mm. Well, where can people find you? What do you want to make people aware of out there?
Depends on who's looking for you.
Good response.
If you look at some of my graphics, I do not want to be found.
I see. N-E-A-L-T-A-Y-R.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And
I am on Instagram, Mollett, M-O-L-L-E-T-T-M-I-K-E, Mike. I didn't pay up my website, and I thought it was a scam, and so I lost everything, and I haven't put it back
up. I tried to get into your website today.
Yeah, what did
not
it
there.
Say?
Oh, page not found.
Well, I very deliberately, on the heels of everything I just said prior to the other two gentlemen that said what they said, I have no internet presence at all. I basically abandoned. We really were kind of pioneers in the early internet. We went to the University of Washington in 1994 and created a website that was considered the first poetry website of its kind to use graphic image, hyperlinks, original text, sound files, et cetera, et cetera.
It was a monster.
The Karma Bombs International Superhighway Poetry Tour of Words. That being said, I deliberately do not have a web presence. I think we need to stick our fingers in the air to see which wind, way the wind is blowing. We need to talk to each other. We live in silos now, and the silos are killing you. You're being harvested by silos. You need to get the hell... hell's okay. Get the hell out of the silo and start grazing the real grass.
Yeah, on the news last night, there was some report about... if you build this machine, everyone dies.
Oh, man, no. Did you see the New York Times when the first it was the two guys that kind of created AI, and they said, we're sorry for what we did. Like, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and then about 6 months later, about 50 people signed another letter or something like that. No, this is all these crazy sci-fi scenarios are very possible now. Everything becomes very possible because we live in a world, we are no longer inventing the world. It is inventing us.
You got to see, there's a great show at the Hammer right now. You know, Best of L.A.
Made in L.A.
And there's some real, there's some credible AI stuff in there.
Well, what about Tilly Norwood? Have you guys been, you hip to Tilly Norwood?
Tilly
Norwood. Is the very first celebrity AI
creation.
She's an actress, and boy, I'll tell you, when you see the videos of her, and you couldn't possibly tell this is not real. This is frightening, and I'm not talking about this as a performer actor, as a human being, because fail-safe scenarios are endless. In other words, they're called in the strike. It's not real, but you don't know that, and you respond.
Yeah.
No, there's so much now with AI that's possible, and it's very scary.
Well, just to wrap things up, I would say that art is actually a force that can help solve this. It's almost like the artists, and I'm talking about all kinds, musicians and dancers. These are people who can look into the future and make sense of the crazy. Maybe take the crazy and get more crazy, whatever it is, as demonstrated tonight.
You're quite hopeful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, I think it's the artist that's going to see us through.
I was just going to say, as artists, our job is to embrace the ordinary, elevate it to an extraordinary level in such an ordinary way that people can receive it. What we do is we don't have off switches. We absorb everything. Our job is to wring ourselves out and absorb more.
Christine, where can people find you?
At CA90048.
Okay, Christine, and helping me again. I'm at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media on every Saturday night with a show called In a Dream, which features the DJ community, repeats late Monday night, and then every Sunday... One of the best talk shows in the nation, if you ask me.
Thank Mystic you, Mystic Pete.
Mystic Pete Chronicles. Thank you, everybody.
Mystic
Pete. Stay tuned for Pat.
You're listening to KXLU at LMU, 88.9 FM, Los Angeles.